Welcome back to another episode of Tread Lightly. I am super excited for today's topic because I think it's one that is a little confusing, but is going to be super, super helpful. So I am your co-host and running coach, Amanda Brooks of Run to the Finish.
And I am your co-host and running coach, Laura of Laura Norris Running.
If you're new, I think we just need to establish this a little. Laura, why don't you share a little about your credentials?
Yes. So I've been working as a run coach since 2016. I have a master's degree in applied exercise physiology with a concentration in sport nutrition, summa cum laude, 4.0 on graduating. I have a sport nutritionist certification from the International Society of Sport Nutrition, and I am a certified personal trainer from the National Strength and Conditioning Association. I think that's the full list. And I'm a doubly certified running coach, Jack Daniels, VDOT, and an RRCA.
Just a few things behind her name. I've got a bunch of those little certs too, but definitely not the schooling. So I love our combo of being able to provide you a lot of the studies and the data. I have been coaching since 2012 and have literally between one-on-one and groups worked with thousands of runners. So we understand your questions and we understand the confusion, and hopefully we're going to help break some of that down today, giving you both the science and how you can apply it to yourself.
Yes, especially because I think today's topic is one that has become demonized now, but when you and I were coaching earlier in our careers, it was treated differently. And when you get into the exercise science side, this is a lot messier than you see it presented on Instagram. You've probably seen this presented really cut and dry on Instagram, and that's just physiology doesn't quite work that way. And what we're talking about is the gray zone, this area in between truly easy running and hard running, moderate intensity running, zone 3 out of 5, whatever you want to call it. But before we get to that, we have a listener question.
Yes. So this is from Instagram at liz.lee. Hi, guys. I love the pod. I've listened to every episode. Thank you. Please make sure you're sharing it too. I just finished your most recent episode and had a follow-up question regarding eating before running. I'm often doing 5 to 8 kilometer easy runs in the morning without eating first. I'm not intentionally fasting. It's just early in the morning. Is it recommended to eat before shorter runs, or is that just applicable to harder and longer runs? I think this is got to be one of the most common questions that I get anytime we talk about fueling. So I love it. What's your first take on this?
Yeah. So first, I would also recommend that this listener goes back and listen to episode 40 that we did on diet trends, because we talk about fasting with running, even if it's not intentional, and all the physiological ramifications of that. But generally, what I tell my athletes is to eat before you run, full stop. If you're going to go run in the morning, eat before. Even if it's really short, even if you don't technically need it, one thing we're really thinking about here is closing windows of low energy availability. So you wake up, you haven't eaten in 12 or so hours, your glycogen stores are low, your energy availability is low, and if we often train in windows of low energy availability consistently, it's not that great for bone health, it's not that great for hormonal health, it's not that great for performance. So I always tell people, eat something. A couple of graham crackers, an applesauce pouch, a banana, even sport drink if you can't get down solid food. What would you say?
Agreed. And I think it's also kind of looking at long-term recovery. So if I eat before so that I have better energy, recover faster after, I'm going to feel better tomorrow. So kind of thinking through that long-term process. And certainly there was a period where, like Miami, I found it very hard to eat when it was that hot. So I would drink a protein, some shake or a sports drink or something like that. And that also got me hydrated. So even before those short runs, that got me used to putting something in my system, and then it's easier to add in the banana, add in something else. So, you know, baby step your way there, but 100% I would try to get yourself to start doing something before every run and just make it a habit.
Yes. I think hopefully the listener listens to that, since they're reaching out, and hopefully anyone who is listening who is in that same situation takes something from that advice. So moving on now to the gray zone. Do you want to define what the gray zone is for people who might not be familiar?
Sure. So I will let you take the scientific definition, but I will say it this way. The gray zone is when you have gone beyond your easy effort and haven't gone into a truly hard intervals style effort. So for most folks, we're kind of talking about zone three. And as we've discussed in other episodes, there are a lot of different ways to calculate your heart rate zones. I've come to the point where I really like the Karvonen method because it takes into account both your resting heart rate and your max heart rate, and will help then kind of define your numbers. So on most charts, it's going to be 70 to 80% of your max is what you'll kind of see on there. I always say on the rating of perceived exertion scale, this is kind of your 5 to 6 effort a lot of the times. It could trend a little higher towards the end of a session, but your easy days should be more like a 4. So if you're tipping into this 5 and 6, you're going a little too hard if the goal is easy. For the talk test, on an easy effort, you should be able to just answer someone's questions. You're not gasping. You don't need to take a lot of breaks. I mean, it's not sitting still talking, but it shouldn't be crazy hard to talk. Meanwhile, when you're in kind of this zone three, you're probably speaking in short sentences. So not a long run-on thing. You're answering more succinctly because then you need to take a second, get in a little bit more oxygen. So that's how I would come at it from the general perspective. But what are we actually looking at in terms of what your body's doing?
Yeah. So first, I'm going to bring in a little bit of chaos here. And this shows how messy physiology and exercise science can be. A lot of the research studies actually define the gray zone as like 83 to 90-ish% of max heart rate.
Whoa.
Which is higher than the zones.
So hard.
Yeah. Like, so it's like you're going to see it very differently defined in different places. Like zone two gets cut off differently by different physiologists and coaches. Same with zone three. So that's already where it gets really, really messy, is what one coach sometimes calls zone two, is what another would say, oh, no, that's zone three, or vice versa. Kind of like you said, though, like it is that point where you don't go, you go from being able to talk conversationally to maybe more like shorter sentences. And that's because when you pass from zone two to zone three on the 5-scale model, you cross your first ventilatory threshold. And what happens here is your breathing rate changes and you start consuming more oxygen. Your body is using more carbohydrates plus that oxygen to produce energy. So in like zone two, zone one, you're relying a lot on fat oxidation, still some carb oxidation, but it's not the dominant source. Zone three is where carbohydrates become dominant. However, and I think this point is really important because I see some athletes misunderstand this and develop a fear of zone three. Zone three is not anaerobic. You are still predominantly using aerobic energy sources. It's just using different substrates, fuel sources, carb versus fat. Because of these higher carbohydrate oxidation rates, you burn more glycogen, the carbohydrates stored in your muscles, which leads to more fatigue. It prolongs your recovery. So these runs are more fatiguing. They take longer to recover from, and usually you can't train at as high of a volume. So a lot of times we see easy runners kind of start out in zone three, like you just go for a run and you're breathing's kind of labored, but it's not hard. But then you're like, why can't I build up my mileage? It feels hard. It feels like it takes me forever to recover. That's because there's also some like nervous system stress that's higher going on here, but it's a lot to do with the glycogen burning and slightly higher biomechanical loading rates.
I'm curious your thoughts on why some of them use kind of that 83%. Do you think that's when they're working with certain types of runners? Because I'm thinking for myself, if I'm running at 83%, that is me towards the midway point of a 10K race, and that does not feel like zone three to me. That feels like I'm squarely in zone four, ready to go into five by the end.
Yeah, so a lot of the physiologists used elite athletes to delineate their zones. And what we see with elite athletes is that their second ventilatory threshold, what we call lactate threshold a lot, is a very high, like that heart rate corresponding with it is a very high percentage of their maximum heart rate, of their VO2 max. So like they can go really fast while keeping their physiology stable, as recreational runners tend to have a bigger gap between their lactate threshold rate, between their first ventilatory or aerobic threshold rate, heart rate, and the higher up. So that's why we see these different numbers. And that's why I think it really is important to be assessing your RPE and your breathing, is because where your two thresholds are in relation to your max is going to depend on your training and your genetics. And it might be different for you than it is for the elites or for some other runners, you know.
Okay, I think that was helpful, so that not all of you are now thinking you can push all the way up to that level. If you're wondering,
don't push all the way up to that level if it feels hard.
Yeah. If you're wondering why it's called the gray zone, the idea of this sort of came about because in your easy runs, what we're developing is that aerobic power and your endurance and, you know, all of those things that we want to be able to run farther and have that feel easier. And then once you get into your intervals, you know, your hard push, you're developing those fast twitch muscles and all of that top end speed and things like that. So we started calling this area in the middle that a lot of people were falling into when they didn't have a purpose for it, the gray zone, because you weren't going hard enough and you weren't going easy enough. So you were just taxing your body without getting either result from it. So that's where kind of the term comes from. And that's led a lot of people to think that all zone 3 miles are junk miles. And I wouldn't say that. So we're going to talk about some of the reasons to use it, some of the reasons you need to stop using it so much. And the main one is that people who are just kind of falling into this accidentally basically end up overtraining. And I think both Laura and I can say early in our training, we both probably did this because I just didn't really realize. I thought all my easy runs should be a specific pace. And that is not how your body works. So easy is not a pace, it is an effort level. And being willing to kind of adjust that will often keep you from running slightly too hard on your easy days.
Yeah, I mean, a really good way to easily delineate the zones is to be like, can I talk conversationally? If you can't, you're in zone 3. If you can talk with your training partner or sing along to a song or, you know, say a few sentences out loud without gasping in the air, you can know that you're in zone 2. That's like the really big distinction. And we don't want to be like going so hard you can't speak conversationally on every single easy run. Like Amanda said, breaks down your body, but there are some really strategic times to use zone 3 training. When do you use zone 3 training with your athletes?
So I tend to find as we're getting into the middle part of a training cycle, towards the end of a training cycle, then we're slowly increasing either tempo runs or practicing miles at goal half marathon pace, goal marathon pace. And so that mileage shouldn't feel as intense as usually like a short interval where you're like looking at your watch like, oh, I've only got 2 minutes left at this pace. Instead, we're kind of trying to find that pace that it feels like a slight push, but you can hold it. You're like, oh, I got this. And then you get a little running recovery and you're able to hit that pace again. So for me, it tends to kind of start to show up mid and then through the end of the training cycle is where I start putting in for most folks.
Yeah, I agree. It's very heavily used for marathon and half marathon training because your race paces for those distances are most likely going to fall into zone 3, marathon training at the lower end, half marathon pace at the higher end. And there is a lot of value to doing goal pace training in those distances. One, it helps you understand how that pace feels so that you're less likely to go out too fast on race day, so that you know how to hold it when fresh and when tired. Two is it does help with very low level lactate clearance, which will help you run at that pace longer, that intensity longer without fatigue. And three, it is the same biomechanical loading that you'll then experience on race day And if you're someone who suffers from muscle cramps, which I know we just had a recent episode on, or who just feels like their legs give up in a race, you need to adapt your legs to that biomechanical load.
There was a very popular trainer who may have made a comment about doing all of their long runs at their goal marathon pace. And so I think having just stated some of the benefits, a good reminder that this is not something you do for every long run. And generally, even when it is part of your long run, it's not your entire long run.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, because like we're saying, there's higher glycogen burning, higher mechanical stress. If you do this for every single long run in your marathon build, you might get injured, you might overtrain, or you might just come to race day a little overcooked and feeling like a hot piece of garbage instead of feeling confident and ready to push.
Yeah, I feel like if you've gone through multiple training cycles where by the time you hit peak week, you are just feeling completely burned out and it becomes really hard to hit your workouts, there is a very good chance you've been doing a lot of your easy runs too hard.
Yeah, because that pace in training will, that easy zone pace will slow down when you are doing heavy marathon pace, half marathon pace training. There's a whole model to it, even it's called pyramidal training, where it's like 75 to 80% easy, 15 to 20% moderate, 5% or less hard, so like not much interval work. You're doing these big marathon pace tempos, you're doing half marathon pace work, sometimes in your long run, and a lot of times during those peak weeks, a lot of athletes have to slow a lot down on their easy runs more than so, which is again why you don't want to focus on a pace. I've seen athletes have to slow down by like 30 seconds per mile or more compared to what their easy runs were at the start of marathon training when there was less fatigue because of the fatigue accumulating from doing these big workouts.
Hugely important. I think, I hope everyone heard that and really paid attention to that, because your pace will very likely change, as she said, with the intensity and volume. So one of the other training models that we've seen a lot of is more the polarized training model. And so this is what I think you're hearing a lot of on social media, which is hard days hard, easy days easy. And so that sort of cuts out this middle zone. And that can definitely work in some cases. And this kind of comes down to learning your body a little bit. And I think when I'm doing my 10K training, it oftentimes is probably a little closer to that. And then I have some days where I am practicing like miles at 10K pace, but not nearly as much volume of that as when I'm doing the half or the full marathon.
Yeah. Yeah. Typically polarized training, like you said, is used more commonly in 5K, 10K, quote unquote, shorter distances, as pyramidal training with more gray zone, zone three, is used for the longer distances like the marathon or half, because the intensities used in those respective training cycles are closer to the respective races. So polarized training in like the research literature is actually really hard, because it's either all zone one to two, so all easy, or there's that 20% hard, upper end of zone four, zone five. We're talking like really hard intervals here. Sometimes in those models, athletes will do like all easy runs and then two interval workouts per week. And what's interesting is that polarized training is actually most commonly used in endurance sports that don't have the impact loading of running. So if you're already listening to this and thinking, ooh, 20% hard sounds like a lot, like that's a lot of interval work, it's because it is for running. Usually we see this in like skiing, cycling, things that don't beat up your body as much. You might find that if you're doing like polarized training for a 5K or 10K, it's less than 20% of that even is hard, because That's a lot of time spent running hard.
And doesn't polarized training often require a little bit higher volume of training?
Yes, yes, it's supposed to. So in a polarized model, to get the full aerobic benefits from running truly easy, it's supposed to be in the context of high volume, higher than most recreational runners are running. Like we're talking probably upwards, I would say upwards of like 8 or 9 hours per week, probably really getting into the range of 10 to 13 hours per week. Some of those cross-country ski and cycling studies do so many hours of training a week, like bonkers amounts that we could not mimic in running. And that's because you need that high volume for a polarized model to work properly.
And I think a good reminder here that when we talk about 80-20 running, 80% of your runs being easy, 20% being hard, this gray zone, zone three tempo runs, they fall into the 20%. They don't get counted in your 80%. I think it's real easy to sort of be like, but it wasn't that hard. But again, it's hard enough that your body needs more recovery. And that's what we're really focused on. So when you're constantly going just slightly too hard in the moment, it doesn't feel like, oh, that workout was super hard, or, oh, I'm so burned out, or anything like that. So it's very easy to sort of convince yourself that it's okay. It really is kind of as the months start to drag on, or even for some runners, you may get through a training cycle and be totally fine, but then into the next training cycle, suddenly you're having unexpected injuries, or you are having some trouble sleeping, or, you know, your performance has just kind of plateaued and you can't seem to progress any farther. And quite often, both of us will start working with someone and initially be like, okay, we really got to talk about your easy runs. Like, I know you say they feel easy, but your body and your heart rate are telling me they are not easy enough.
Oh, yeah. That's probably like one of the top interventions I make with people in the 3.5 to 4 hour marathon range, where it's like we need to slow down those easy runs because they're like, well, a 9 pace feels super easy to me. And they're trying to be a 4 hour marathon. And you're like, it might feel easy in terms of like you don't feel like you're straining, but is your breathing actually indicating that it's easy? And even if you can be pretty comfortable, why not slow down your easy days and just accumulate less fatigue so that you can do more volume, so that you can do harder workouts? Because that volume and those hard workouts are big drivers of adaptation, more so than, you know, trying to hit a certain pace on your easy runs, if that means your easy runs are short.
What's the longest duration that you'll build someone up to, say, during marathon training where they're doing goal marathon pace miles?
Oh, so I read a lot of Canova training early in my coaching days. And so I've had people do, I am a big fan of 10 mile tempos at marathon pace, usually in a long run, sometimes like in the middle of a 20 mile long run or in 16 mile long run. Sometimes also I'll have athletes then turn around them, do them in the week. Also, if their time permits, I've had a few advanced athletes do about like 12 miles at marathon pace, but those are my guys hanging out at like 3:15 paces, where I think like 12 miles is like roughly 90 minutes. I always kind of go by roughly 90 minutes total at marathon pace. Sometimes for some athletes, I break it up where they're doing 90 minutes total of work, but it's not all continuous. What about you?
Yeah, that's fun. I'm trying to think. I don't think I've had anyone do 10 straight. But now I want to try that. That means training for a marathon. So I'm not committing to anything, folks.
It's like I have this one workout. I didn't come up with it myself. I think I read it in like one of Mario Fraioli's articles years and years ago. But it's the first 10 miles at easy pace, like super slow. And then the second 10 miles at marathon pace, or like within 10, 15 seconds of marathon pace. And it's actually a difficult workout. Most people can't really do it. But if you can make it through at least like 8 to 9 miles of that workout without slowing down too much, you're ready for your marathon. Like there is a huge, huge confidence boost, I think, also that comes from doing really big marathon tempos. I know with a lot of our Olympic qualifiers at like CIM and stuff, if you look at a lot of their training, some of them, especially those working with like swap running who had really quick turnarounds, were doing 10 to 12 mile marathon pace tempos. It's a very effective approach if you are ready for it. And again, if you're good about keeping your other easy runs truly easy, 1.5 to 2 minutes per mile slower than marathon pace.
And would you define a tempo run any differently than a marathon goal pace run?
I use tempos as kind of like a catch-all for where we're holding a goal pace for a prolonged time. So like both half marathon pace runs and marathon pace runs can be categorized as tempo. So I just mean that you're holding it continuously. And I realized that tempo is one of those poorly defined terms in running. So thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah, I thought I would ask because I'm sure a lot of people are hearing it. And yeah, tempo is kind of a nebulous term. And so I think that is helpful to kind of know that's where we're sort of looking. It could also be, you know, when we start initially talking about tempos, it may only be the pace you can hold for 10 minutes, then 20 minutes. Like, certainly there is in no world the expectation that even like halfway through marathon training, you should be able to hold your goal marathon pace for 10 miles. Yet it really is a progressive build.
It is. And like, I should clarify with those big marathon pace, goal marathon pace runs I give my athletes, those are in their peak weeks. We start out with kind of like you said, 4 miles at marathon pace early in the build, 5 miles, maybe have a run where they finish the final 2 or 3 miles at marathon pace. We're not doing these from week one. I do know that there are some certain training methodologies that use a 16-mile long run that start very long tempo runs very early and can kind of overcook people. This should be something you build up to over 16 to 18 weeks.
Certain methodology coaches giving me the side eye last week. Okay, one other thing to just kind of note here is for beginning runners, there may be a little bit of crossover when kind of zone two, zone three-ish, right?
Yes, yeah. And I think when we talk about this, it's important to take a step back and look at the early adaptations that take place. So in about like your first 6 to 12 months of training, you will start to see changes to your cardiovascular and respiratory physiology. If you're a beginner runner or you're returning from a very long layoff, your heart and lungs and your vascular system are not adapted to the demands of exercise. So because your stroke volume isn't as high as it is once you adapt, your heart rate is going to have to be higher to maintain the cardiac output needed. When you train and you start to notice your heart rate go down, that's because your stroke volume is going up in response to training. Beginner runners don't have that higher stroke volume. So they might find it really, really difficult to run in zone two. And that's where sometimes, especially since you're doing low volume then, you're probably not doing hard workouts. Some research, such as a 2015 review in Frontiers in Physiology, a 2019 study in Frontiers Sports and Active Living, say that it might be okay if you have a little bit more moderate running heart rate wise, but this again is not licensed to go out and push yourself hard every time you're doing a run as a beginner.
Yeah. And I love that reminder there. So say you've picked up your first couch to marathon plan and you're going to do it in 20 weeks. Like, I really want you to find the easiest, lowest possible heart rate you can do because your volume is going to build so quickly compared to what most folks might do in a 12-week couch to 5K kind of plan. And so in that couch to 5K, you're doing 3 days a week. It's helping you kind of figure out run, walk. And so, yeah, during your run portion, it might be a little bit higher, but you aren't also adding in, you know, all these other pieces and hours and training. And so I think that is a really, really good reminder that don't give yourself license just because. Really and truly kind of say, okay, where am I? What's happening right now? How much am I running? And how much am I going a little bit over kind of where I want to be into zone two? And then watching. So paying attention as you keep going week after week, is your heart rate coming down at the same pace? No, your heart rate suddenly higher at the same pace. And then that is consistent. That's probably a sign, okay, maybe I really was pushing it a little bit too hard. And so allow yourself to just back off a little bit.
And I know you're a fan of these, Elsa. This is why I love run-walk intervals so much for beginner athletes, is because you're going to have such a hard time keeping your heart rate down. It's going to probably jump up pretty quickly. Use those walk breaks to keep, like, to bring it down throughout the session so that the overall session load isn't too high. Maybe you're keeping the overall session in zone two or low end of zone three. Again, not licensed to make it into an interval run, though.
Yes. Run Rock really is just, I feel like it's actually the natural thing most of us do when we're starting. Like, I'm just going to run to that mailbox. But it provides a little more structure to it. So you can keep yourself from getting to the point of like hands on knees gasping. Mm-hmm. So yeah, absolutely love it.
Yes. Are there any final concluding thoughts you would leave our listeners?
Yeah, final thought. I would just say if you have been using pace to determine your easy runs, it's time to make a little mental switch. Start just looking at your heart rate, seeing what's happened there. Start paying attention if you're running by yourself. One of the tools is, could you recite the Pledge of Allegiance or something like that to kind of practice that talk test sort of method. And then don't be afraid to slow down if you realize that you are going a little bit harder than you thought. The benefits over time really and truly are going to add up.
Yes. Yes, very much. And the one thing I would leave the listeners is to, once you're, you know, experienced enough to begin to dabble into other intensities, spend some time doing runs in the moderate zone deliberately. I think it has two benefits. One is, you know, it's still a upper end aerobic training. It's going to really help you with marathons and half marathons. But if you do the occasional tempo run at marathon pace, even if you're not training for a marathon, you build it into your plan, you get a sense of how that feels. And it then provides a calibration point and a check for your easy runs. You're like, oh, if I did this run at marathon pace and it felt like this, oh, that's how my easy days are feeling. That's your sign to slow them down. I think just like calibrating all your zones throughout practice is really beneficial for a lot of runners.
Absolutely. All right. Hopefully this helped to answer some questions. If you have more questions, though, you can always find us on Instagram at @treadlightlyrunning. We are always watching for your questions and comments so that we can make sure we are hitting the right topics and answering your questions.
Yes. And as always, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, wherever you're listening. Thank you so much for listening.